Joan's parents invited me to the funeral. I had been, Mrs. Gilling said, one of Joan's best friends. You don't have to go, you know, Dr. Nolan told me. You can always write and say I said it would be better not to. I'll go, I said, and I did go, and all during the simple funeral service I wondered what I thought I was burying. At the altar the coffin loomed in its snow pallor of flowers, the black shadow of something that wasn't there. The faces in the pews around me were waxen with candlelight, and pine boughs, left over from Christmas, sent up a sepulchral incense in the cold air. Beside me, Jody's cheeks bloomed like good apples, and here and there in the little congregation I recognized other faces of other girls from college and my hometown who had known Joan. Dee Dee and Nurse Kennedy bent their kerchiefed heads in a front pew. Then, behind the coffin and the flowers and the face of the minister and the faces of the mourners, I saw the rolling lawns of our town cemetery, knee-deep in snow now, with the tombstones rising out of it like smokeless chimneys. There would be a black, 6-foot-deep gap hacked in the hard ground. That shadow would marry this shadow, and the peculiar, yellowish soil of our locality seal the wound in the whiteness, and yet another snowfall erase the traces of newness in Joan's grave. I took a deep breath and listened to the old brag of my heart. I am. I am. I am. The doctors were having their weekly board meeting, old business, new business, admissions, dismissals, and interviews. Leafing blindly through a tatty National Geographic in the asylum library, I waited my turn. Patients, with accompanying nurses, made their rounds of the stocked shelves, conversing, in low tones, with the asylum librarian, an alumna of the asylum herself. Glancing at her, myopic, spinsterish, effaced, I wondered how she knew she had really graduated at all, and, unlike her clients, was whole and well. "Don't be scared," Dr. Nolan had said. "I'll be there, and the rest of the doctors you know, and some visitors, and Dr. Vining, the head of all the doctors, will ask you a few questions, and then you can go." But in spite of Dr. Nolan's reassurances, I was scared to death. I had hoped, at my departure, I would feel sure and knowledgeable about everything that lay ahead. After all, I had been analyzed. Instead, all I could see were question marks. I kept shooting impatient glances at the closed boardroom door. My stocking seams were straight, my black shoes cracked but polished, and my red wool suit flamboyant as my plans. Something old, something new. But I wasn't getting married. There ought, I thought, to be a ritual for being born twice, patched, retreaded, and approved for the road. I was trying to think of an appropriate one when Dr. Nolan appeared from nowhere and touched me on the shoulder. "All right, Esther." I rose and followed her to the open door. Pausing, for a brief breath, on the threshold, I saw the silver-haired doctor who had told me about the rivers and the pilgrims on my first day, and the pocked, cadaverous face of Miss Huey, and eyes I thought I had recognized over white masks. The eyes and the faces all turned themselves towards me, and guiding myself by them, as by a magical thread, I stepped into the room.